Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
When Diplomacy Fails presents.
Hello and welcome to When Diplomacy Fails.
Hey guys, welcome to When Diplomacy Fails. Welcome to When Diplomacy Fails.
Hello and welcome to
Hello
When Diplomacy Fails.
Hello and welcome to When Diplomacy Fails.
A project 5 years in the making.
The Franco-Prussian War.
The 7 Years' War.
Of the When Diplomacy Fails special on Napoleon.
The Crimean War.
To When Diplomacy Fails special on World War I.
The Dutch Revolt.
To the When Diplomacy Fails special on the 30 Years' War.
The July Crisis Anniversary Project.
The Swedish Deluges.
Britain goes to war.
The 1916.
To the Franco-Dutch War of 1672.
This is When Diplomacy Fails Remastered. Hello, history friends. Welcome to When Diplomacy Fails Remastered, and welcome to the first of two parts of this wonderful conversation I had with Anne is a Man. I actually got Anne is a Man from his podcast review blog on this podcast just in time for the special party we have going on here. So who is Anne is a Man? Well, if you didn't know, his full name is pronounced Anna, and I don't know how to pronounce the rest of his name because it's Dutch and I can't do languages as you all, and as he well knows. But his name is less important than what he actually does. He's an accomplished reviewer of podcasts, and he's been looking at podcasts, listening to podcasts, and talking about podcasts since podcasts were really a thing. Over 10 years, guys. So he's been around the block and he has lots of good opinions and lots of bad opinions on what he does or doesn't like. And I thought he'd be an interesting guy and an interesting voice to have on to kind of flesh out really how far podcasts have come and how far history podcasting in particular has come since, well, it began. So I hope you enjoy it. The interview is split into two parts because one of Anna's big bugbears is the fact that he doesn't like super long podcasts, a la Dan Carlin, which go for like 5 hours or what have you, which we do get into in the episode, so stay tuned for that. But I thought it'd be a bit ironic if, after complaining about that, I released the interview in a big, near 2 hour long episode. So, to represent the fact that we both agree on the idea of podcasts being a certain digestible length, I decided to release this interview in a hopefully more digestible two-part format. Which you guys can, of course, listen to one after the other because they're both going to be released on the same day. It's funny, really, because in this interview, I talked to Anna about a few different things, and some things that I do he really likes, and some things I do he doesn't like. But if you want to hear a different side of myself, and if you want to hear me not always necessarily coming off particularly well, or not always necessarily receiving particularly good feedback, then this could be a good place to hear that. That doesn't mean he gives out to me or anything, but it means that he provides me with opinions on things that I'd never really thought about in this and in the second part of this interview. Overall, I think it went really well, and Anna and I had a really good time doing it, and it's highly likely he'll be on again sometime in the future. So, make sure you listen to both parts, unless you're one of those people that just jumps in wherever. That's fine too, I guess, and I hope you enjoy it. Let me know what you thought through the usual channels. Hope you're enjoying this wonderful party we got going, guys. Thanks very much for listening, and enjoy.
So I had to spend some time in the hospital, and the same thing happened there all over. A doctor comes into the room, is looking for Anna, sees no woman, and I'm just waiting for my doctor to come. When are they finally going to show up? So Anne as a man is much more convenient.
Oh, yeah. You should have gotten to write that down on the hospital notes that his name is Anne as a man, and then they would have been able to find you.
Yeah, well, obviously, when you're the patient, you're supposed to be passive, and they write everything down for you. You have absolutely no control over it. It's often nothing that they call it a total institution. When you're in a total institution, and it doesn't matter whether it's a hospital or a prison, you're a subject. Your life is being controlled.
Sure.
There's no individuality there and no free will. That's how it is.
Oh, if it's anything like the Irish medical system, I know exactly where you're coming from. I suppose the less said about the hospital services all over the world, the better.
Right, and we were going to talk about history, of course.
Yes, thankfully.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, we'll get into all this. This is just to give me a bit of a background knowledge for yourself. You have a background in academia, do you?
Indeed, I do. When I left the Netherlands, I was 30 year, and I was teaching Dutch constitutional law at the University of Amsterdam. But in Israel, I found employment in the software industry. Yeah, I have a background in Dutch law. And when I was studying law, I ventured into criminology, sociology, psychology. I've done a whole lot of things. And I've always interested in history and in languages. So I get all over the place.
Sure. Okay. I'd like to have you like talk about your kind of views on history podcasting, kind of. Almost like how it's, I suppose, progressed is the best way. Just like your opinions on it. I was listening to one of your interviews, and you gave a great quote. You were like, you're talking about Dan Carlin's Death Throes of the Republic, and you said that because it was like 5 hours long. You said if you listened to that, it would be the death throes of you. So I thought that was very funny. So I don't know. I don't know how happy. I have no problem with you saying what you want to say. If I ask you, like, obviously, I mean, we could always do that whole terms and conditions thing where it's like the views of these guests who don't necessarily represent the views of When Diplomacy Fails. I'm perfectly happy to get you say what you like or don't like. Would that be all right for you?
Yes, that's perfectly fine. And on the subject of Dan Carlin, yeah, I have a huge problem with lengthy podcasts. And I think in the same interview I said Dan Carlin has perfected the art of the monologue, and that is indeed his great strength. But in order to make a proper podcast, in my opinion, you have to show some discipline, some restraint. So even if it's a wonderful monologue, you have to be able to round it down in well, let's say maximum an hour. And when it goes on more than that, I cannot see how anybody can stay on top of it. I know for sure that I can't. And it's really sad because and I feel for Dan Carlin. I have great respect for him, and Dan Carlin is one of those pioneers in history podcasts. And Dan Carlin was also someone who was very supportive of my blog, and he used to say in the early days, I was the history podcast reviewer, and I set the standards. And when I privately said to him, okay, well, here's a standard for you. You really really have to break this down and not make it longer than an hour.
Yeah.
And he never came back to me. So it looks like Dan Carlin and I are no longer on speaking terms, but that doesn't take away the fact that I greatly respect his work, and I think he has a great talent there. And it goes for many, many podcasts. There are a great many good history podcasts out there, and I would love to sit down with many of them, to shape them up a little bit. And some of them are going too long. For example, the Martin Maid podcast about Israeli history is another wonderful podcast, another very, very talented guy. And he also puts out episodes of 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. The last one is nearing 6 hours. And I can't handle that. Yes, that's just too much. And I'm sure you can work around that. I'm assuming that anybody who has a podcast has something to say. So, if there is a point that you have in mind, you have to be able to put that clearly and concisely. And if you can't do that, then probably your thoughts have not been developed enough. Or if you need to ramble about, okay, then do that, and afterwards do some post-production.
Sure.
Any which way, but you can't just throw a rough diamond at us, at the public. I think that is that's just wasting my listening time and your talent. So that's really a pity. And I've been saying this several times, and I've been saying it privately to some podcasters, including Dan Carlin. Doesn't seem to have that much of an effect, so maybe do not like to hear, and maybe they are spoiled by the handful of fans that they have that just can't get enough of them.
Oh yeah.
But that's one of the standards I would put forward, and I'm happy to see in your podcast that the episodes are, let's say, around 40 minutes.
Yes, I try to keep it 30 to 40 minutes. I think that's the golden, like, but initially myself, I had to learn that. I think it's something you learn in retrospect. Like at the start, I didn't really know what I was doing, to be fair. So I kind of just churned out as much information as I possibly could. It was kind of like my exams in school. I just blathered on about everything I knew, and then it ended up filling an hour. And I was like, okay, I guess an hour is right for me. And then it came to doing the Napoleon stuff, and the Napoleon stuff was ridiculous because I tried to squeeze it all into three episodes and it just didn't work. And then the last one was 2 hours long and it was just horrendous, and I knew it was bad, but it took me a while to actually change my formula. And I think the people that have the very long episodes will probably argue, oh, we need to keep it this way because it's how you tell a full story. Like it'll be like the pieces will be separated if we don't do that. And I'm kind of like, yeah, but all you had to do is insert like a few sentences at the end being like, and like you could, it's even fun to me to insert like a kind of a cliffhanger sentence at the end of each episode. I find that really like rewarding and like creatively in terms of like making people want to come back for like the next chapter, if you like, of the story.
Sure. It is, of course, you mentioned the word story. Here's a very interesting point that is should be a central question before you even start your podcast. What kind of a history storyteller are you? Are you a storyteller? Do you want to get into the narrative? Or I think you yourself are a bit more of a historian. You have historical questions, and you also revealed the sources that you have and said, well, we used to look at it this way. And for example, in the current subject about the Franco-Dutch War, where it's said in the beginning, we regularly thought that Charles, the King of England, was not very instrumental in what was going on.
Yeah.
And then you go on to show that it could very well be that he's been diplomatically bringing this all about.
Yeah.
It also matches, of course, the title of your podcast. It's all about diplomacy, whether it is a failure here or a success, but it is definitely about diplomacy. And that is one way of presenting history.
Sure.
The other way that you can present history is exactly the way that Dan Carlin does, and the Martyr Maid podcast. He also does that. He's really telling a story, and he's telling a story with this kind of personal passion. You have to understand what is going on, and let me show you the perspective of the one side and not the other side. And that is a perfectly legitimate way of bringing it. but there is no reason to assume that either style is naturally resulting in longer podcasts.
No.
if you want an example of that, there is a wonderful gem of a history podcast that occasionally brings out new episodes, but it has been around for a long time, and it's called The Memory Palace.
And these
issues are very short. It's like 10 minutes, 5 minutes, 15 minutes. I don't think there is any Memory Palace issue that is even beyond 30 minutes. You can't find it. Nate DeMeo is the maker. Yeah. He is doing this monologue narrative, a very artistic way of telling the story. And he manages to finish the arc in a very little time. Well, you don't have to do it in 10 minutes like he does. Mm. But if it can be done in 10 minutes, it can be done in 40 minutes. And it certainly doesn't have to take 5 hours. And if you have so many tangents that you somehow want to bring in, well, maybe then you have to spend some more time at the drawing board and deliberate with yourself or with a team of helpers. How are we going to organize this? Because I think the art of storytelling, especially of storytelling, is to keep your listener in attention. And apart from some exceptional individuals, I don't see how any normal human being can stay concentrated for more than 40 minutes. That's just not there. And it's not like a book that you're reading and you can put on the side and then you can open it up and read it in your own speed. Listening to a podcast, even though you can pause it and continue it, it's still something that does not allow from looking back and going forward and looking back again. No, you have to sort of you have to sit out the ride. And therefore, it has to be very, very carefully constructed in such a way that you can somehow finish it in one sitting. And a podcast that lasts for more than an hour, it cannot possibly be managed in one sitting, because who has 1 hour of straight time?
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I mean, for me as well, because Dan Carlin's release schedule is so kind of like there's big gaps in between it, would it not make more this is just the Zach talking, that it works so well for me to have the smaller episodes because it means I can make more of them and churn more of them out. He could, instead of having the 1 6-hour one, he could have like 12 half-hour ones. And like, people would be delighted.
Yeah, well, they would be delighted just as much. But of course, Dan Carlin is a household name, so he can afford this.
Yeah.
Because the technology is also dictating the way you can pull this off. Mm-hmm. And since there is so much being released all the time, and since with the mobile phone and with iPads, we're constantly connected, we don't have to be subscribed to a feed and see somehow this thing finding its way suddenly in our inbox. We're just looking for content all the time. And so if you want to make it worthwhile for people to frequently check your place where you're publishing your stuff, you have to make sure that frequently there is something to find, or otherwise they will just assume that it's pod-faded.
Pod-faded. I like that. That actually ties into what we're doing here quite well, because this is a project that remasters the first 19 episodes. Those episodes where I was barely able to find my voice and you could hear me swallowing and breathing, and you probably still can if you listen hard enough, but all those little ticks that you do wrong when you're just trying to learn how to do and make your way, hopefully they're all going to be erased for this project, and you'll find that basically what it means is that there's a whole load more content for you to catch up on. So I hope you're ready.
But Zach, do you really want to do that? I mean, 19 episodes, that's a lot, and I found them, barring one or two, really well. And of course, you had to find your voice and your ground, but you did that pretty quickly, and you did it in great style. So is it worth the effort? Wouldn't you want to bring new content instead?
Yeah, that's a good question. But actually, by going back into those old episodes, I've been able to draw out a lot more original stuff. And while drawing out the original stuff, I was able to learn kind of like what happened to me with the whole First World War situation, where I did a project on it and then didn't really want to go back to it because I thought, oh, I kind of know this already. And then I went back to it for the July Crisis project and then kind of was like, oh, I don't really know this at all. Maybe it is just an OCD thing, and maybe it's not 100% necessary to go back. But if you have a product and you know that in your mind it does, the first part of that product doesn't quite live up to even your own standards, if you want to like be able to recommend it to people and not have to worry about, say, like terrible Russian accents in the Russo-Japanese War that you insisted on putting on for no good reason, or badly pronounced Chinese names in the Boxer Rebellion, or like a structure that was all over the place for the Italo-Ethiopian War, I mean, doing them again to me is worth it. And also by the time, just to let you know, by the time this is released, it's going to be released in the middle of all those remastered episodes. So it's a bit late to go back now, in other words.
You know, I can also understand it, because I can see, since I've made a bit of a jump, so I listened to, let's say, the first 1 or 2 years of your work and then the last year, I can see how you have matured both as a podcaster but also as a historian. So you're much more careful about how you tell the story. So I can understand that the standards that you're talking about, they have been raised gradually. And then, of course, you know, when you look back, maybe it's right, because I'm sure many listeners are like myself. They discover a podcast, and instead of jumping in the latest episode, they kind of go over the backlog and see where the interesting bits are, or even if they decide that it's really worth listening to it, well, you start at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's like a series on television. If you discover a Game of Thrones right now, you will want to start watching the first season and not start somewhere in the middle. Not that I recommend Game of Thrones, but that was the idea. That was the example that just jumped to mind.
Sure, sure. And I mean, the good thing about it, because it's 5 years old, because the whole idea of this project is that it's insane in the scope and no one's ever done it before, because for 5 weeks, I will be releasing 2 episodes every day. And the reason I'm able to do that is because those episodes are, the bulk of that content is made up by those remastered episodes, which went from 19 episodes. I mean, I also got to like redo Napoleon from the ground up. And rather than being 2 really rushed episodes, he's 8 properly fleshed out ones. And other things as well that I feel kind of had to be done. But because they're all released in a block, and it's not like I'm going to be dragging it out on a weekly basis, if you get what I mean. I think because there'll be so much content all at once, and then in a few months, then we'll be back to our normal kind of programming. So I think people really will really enjoy, or even just maybe they'll be overwhelmed and just want to run away. I'm not really sure. The fact that it'll be bolstered by things like these, like interviews, I think it will make it special. And it's supposed to have a kind of party atmosphere as well. So hopefully, if it's possible to have a party on a podcast, hopefully that's what it'll feel like.
Good. Well, I hope everybody enjoys it as much as we do.
Yeah. I think we should start with, well, one of the most obvious questions, really. I mean, say they don't know who Anaziman is, or what he does, or how he got to this point. How would you describe what it is you do on your blog?
The thing about a blog and any content online, that it should be possible to be taken in without too much of a reference. So it's interesting to tell that, okay, my name is Anne and I'm a Dutchman. And 20 years ago, I moved to Israel. So I'm also an Israeli and I speak Dutch, Hebrew and English very well. And in addition, a couple of other languages. And at some point, I discovered podcasts, and since I had a blog, I started writing whatever I felt like writing about, and then it turned out that the thing that I had most to say about was podcasts. And in those early days, talking about, let's say, 2007, 2008, podcasting was relatively new. There were many people who were reading blogs, but they were not listening to podcasts. And so I was sort of writing the kind of blog that I would have been very happy to find myself. Somebody who is telling me, and it's not really interesting who it is, but it is somebody who's telling me what is out there and sort of matches my own interests, but also in a sort of impartial way tells a little bit about the content that he has found in the podcast and allows room for making my own decision whether I might like this and I might want to try. And then and this is what the formula of the blog became. That it was just relating the kind of podcast that I found. The structure of the post was very simple. I make a short description of what the subject is, what I liked about it, and then where you can find it. And in those early days, it really worked very well that way. And I had a rather broad audience, and I managed to write almost daily. And this is something that works really well for a blog online, and it makes you very visible. And occasionally my blog posts were picked up either on Facebook or Twitter or stumble upon, or even recently there was somebody who reposted it on Reddit. And then you can see that a whole lot of new readers are coming, and a couple of them stay around because, yeah, well, you're actually writing for their needs.
Sure.
But it was getting more and more massive, and I was trying to be complete and was trying to maintain all updated links to the podcast. So it was turning out to be more and more and more of work. And the internet has become much more active in those years, let's say between 2007 and 2010. So much more content was constantly being produced. And so in order to remain visible, I found that I needed to spend a lot of time, not necessarily listening to podcasts and writing about them, but pushing my content in any kind of social media where it would be carried on. And there were moments that Twitter was working well, or StumbleUpon was working well, and Facebook is still a very good place to republish my blog. As a matter of fact, right now, whenever I write a blog post, it barely gets any hits. It barely gets any readers. But the repost that I make on Facebook, that's where it gets the attention. Sure. And so this is the kind of dynamic when you want to push some content on the internet, and that demands a lot of attention. And at some point, I felt I was repeating myself, and I was not capable of maintaining this. And so I took a break for about 2 years, and then I came back because I found that two things had changed. One of them was that actually, especially history podcasting, had greatly improved. I think not only the technology has become much better, or it has become much easier to make a podcast and not be bogged down too much by the technicalities of that. Mm-hmm. And so people like yourself, I think you're an historian, you're not a technical person.
No, not at all.
You're not wasting too much time on the technical side of getting the podcast done and putting it in the feed. All of this has been automated and made very easy. And so you can concentrate on the content. And in the early years, it was really hard to make the sound levels okay and to make sure it got into the feed and the MP3 files were okay and equalized. And there were a lot of stuff that you had to put work in, and now it's all automated. And this has allowed a lot of people to start publishing. And so the great thing that I found that, let's say, between 2010 and 2014, the audio quality has improved, the general quality has improved, and coverage has grown enormously.
Oh, yeah.
So when you take on a subject like Napoleon or World War I, you are talking in even in podcasts and not alone. So that makes it very interesting. And also some obscure subjects, like, for example, there is the history of the Mongols. Well, that is fantastic, and it has been done really well. And then there's the history of Bulgaria and of Denmark and of Germany and of Italy. And so you can get a fantastic coverage also in eras and in geography, and so I got excited again, and I felt again that I had something to say. But now, when I'm writing, I can see that blog and as a man is no longer needed as a hub where you can find new history podcasts, because there are these new hubs. There is, for example, the Agora Podcast Network that you're part of, and there are a couple of more like that. And it is, in general, much easier to find this kind of content. And if you look for content on iTunes, then iTunes has an algorithm that says, "Oh, if you look at this, then here is some similar content." This was not available 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Sure.
So there's no longer a need for that. I can no longer.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Cover anything and not everything, so I have to pick the ones that I want to write about, and this is where I'm in a position where I'm sort of trying to reinvent this blog. What is there that Anne as a man has to really offer as an added value in the world of podcasting? I'm not a podcaster myself. I review podcasts, so podcast listeners and podcast makers, possibly, what would make my blog interesting for them? And I'm not exactly final about how this needs to be done. I find myself on a slippery slope into turning into the grumpy old man of history podcasts. I don't want to start writing posts about what is wrong with this podcast and that podcast, but these are the things I feel most passionately about. That mm-hmm. now that podcasting has become so good, and there are so many examples of how you can pull it off well, I get really irritated about podcasters that, in my opinion, do it wrong.
Yeah.
And the saddest thing about it is some of these people are really good podcasters. And we were talking about Dan Carlin, and that's a fantastic example. Mm-hmm. Dan Carlin is one of the godfathers of history podcasts. There can be no discussion about that. And he's put it on the map, and he's inspired many, many great history podcasters to get started. So Dan Carlin is great. And as a matter of fact, I have a great relationship with Dan Carlin in my early days as a blogger. But his history podcast has developed into these tremendously lengthy episodes that, in my opinion, they're just not right. That you're not ready. If you can, if you have something to say and you can't say it in 40 minutes, then your tale or your point is not ready to be presented yet, and you have to go back to the drawing board. And I kept telling it to him, and now we're not on speaking terms anymore. And it's not because I hate Dan Carlin, quite to the contrary, and I hope he doesn't hate me, but something has gone wrong here, and it also puts a bad example. So you have a wonderful new podcast about a history of Israel. It's called the Modern Made Podcast, and this guy is putting out, Daryl Cooper is his name, this guy is putting out episodes 5-6 hours. I mean, I can't listen to that. And Israeli history is one of the most hot topics that I like to listen about. So please, I'm waiting for this kind of content, but I can sit down. Please do your homework. Get back to the drawing board. Do it. If you're such a good podcaster, then you could do much better than that.
Sure.
So that gets me aggravated. But I don't like to put on that voice and turn Anne as a man into Anne as the grumpy man. That's not me. I'm turning older, and I am a little bit grumpy, but that should stay indoors. So that's why I'm still looking for my footing, and I'm not getting anywhere near the kind of production that I used to have. But I'm very happy that people are still reading my stuff, and people were extremely delighted when I got back to writing reviews, and now you have invited me to your show, so it puts the pressure on. It really, I really have to write some more, but it's difficult. I'm trying to find out what my contribution should be.
Oh, sure. No, I completely understand that. And I think a lot of that is relatable to podcasting as well. You try and find your niche. In a way, it's much easier with podcasting because, like you said, there's so many different ways now to find to find out about new podcasts. I mean, I'm not going to say that we don't need blogs anymore, but I abandoned my own blog pretty much in order to focus on my website because I felt like that was more important. But I know what you mean about needing to find, and like, if you wanted to use this as an opportunity to launch the new phase of Anne is a Man, then that would be cool as well. The only problem is you'll have to think on the spot as to what that new phase will be.
Well, I'm thinking about it all the time. It's an unfinished thought here.
Have you ever considered doing a podcast?
In very preparation stages, and it's something that people keep telling me. Maybe you should make a podcast of your own. You would make a wonderful podcast, maybe a podcast about podcasts. Yeah, I'm not too sure about that. I have sat down and made some recordings only to find out that churning out an episode of a podcast is a lot more work than writing a post on a blog. I have a very demanding job. I'm a family man. I have two grown-up children in their teens. And sure. So that demands a lot of time. So for private projects such as podcasting, I have to rely on 10 minutes here and 5 minutes there that I can some time for that. And writing, you can pull off. But for recording something and for preparing what you're going to say in the recording, you need longer stretches of time. I don't find that I have that. And also as to the subject, and I was thinking about maybe I should make a history podcast about the history of Israel. Because that's what happened to me. I was living in the Netherlands. I never planned to get to Israel, and it happened. And when I got to Israel, I felt I had to find out about the history of Israel. I had to have some founded opinion about what was going on. So I did a lot of reading, a lot of catching up. And so a lot of preparation has actually already been done because I was passionate about finding this stuff out. It's way too early to translate that into my version of the history of Israel. That's not even getting into the subject of how this is very politically laden subject.
It's, yep.
In a rather inconspicuous blog like my own, I was harassed a couple of times by people who are very anti-Israel, and the simple fact that I'm living in Israel was enough for them to to start ventilating their aggression on me, and I'm not good at that. I don't have an elephant skin. I'm very, very sensitive, so when people start saying nasty things, I don't feel like being in that spot. So Israeli history has that other bombshell under it. So maybe Netherlands history, because, you know, that's where I'm from, and there are a couple of Dutch language history podcasts that do it really well. But, well, there I have no real passion and no real lot of work in getting educated into it, and so... Yeah, that would be too much.
Sure.
And the third idea that I had is to make something of a talk podcast, because I have made a lot of podcaster friends and a lot of historian friends, and do something like what we're doing right now, make it into a history discussion, and then take on a subject and talk to a historian and ask him the questions, because, you know, with all the podcasts that I've listened to and all the books that I've read, I may not be a historian, but I'm well enough informed to ask the right questions or to recognize what is a valid question and where is something interestingly new to be found out about history.
Of course.
So that would be very nice. Well, okay, so that's it's still in the stages of an idea, and I don't think I'm ever going to do it. But if ever I were going to do it, then probably it would be something like that.
No, that's good. It's good to hear your kind of thoughts rolling over. It's interesting to hear things from your perspective as well, because it's not to say you don't know what it's like until you try it yourself. But I mean, I know you would never consider yourself, I'm an expert on podcasts or anything like that, but. It's a whole different ballgame when you try to make one yourself. I mean, I take for granted how long it takes now to make an individual episode. And it's only when I tell people how long it takes that they kind of give me this open mouth stare and then are kind of like, why on earth do you do it, Zach? And then I point out that I have badges and fridge magnets and merchandise and lots of patrons relying on me. And aside from my obvious own personal interests. So all that kind
but
of stuff.
But that's a valid question. Why do you do it?
Well, I mean, ever since I started listening to podcasts, it's kind of a cliche story, but if you'll bear with me, the very first one I listened to was A History of Rome, and when I listened to that, it was like this impossible thing that I could never do, not because not because like Mike Duncan was infallible or anything. I mean, he's a really great podcaster, and in a way he did inspire me. But to me, it just seemed like I could tell that a lot of work went into them, and I was like, oh, there's no way I could do that. And it wasn't until I listened to The History of England by David Crowther that I think it was on one episode he mentioned that if anyone wanted help or anything like that, setting up a podcast, to just get in contact with them. So one day I was kind of, I think it was in a really boring college lecture I was having in college. And now I'd always wanted to teach, but I teach history and at a university level, not to like secondary school or like high school kids or anything like that. I want to teach people history who actually care about history. And that was another reason why history podcasts appealed to me, because the only people that are going to look my stuff up are the people that actually are interested in it. So that's what led me to the idea of podcasting. And then it was kind of being turned over in my mind, and I was like, well, what would I do? What really interests me? And it's like what you were saying earlier on about trying to find the blog that that you would want to find. I tried to find a podcast that basically just covered diplomacy, or at least covered the build-up to war, because mainly from my examinations on the First World War, like I used to read about the characters involved in it and built up my own what I thought was this really great idea, and oh, I have to do the First World War and all that kind of stuff, and it's really interesting. And sure, it was, but I had this kind of vague idea that I wanted to cover wars throughout history, so I looked at a few different ways I could do it, and I just couldn't set my finger on it, because I didn't want to do a chronological history of a country, which seemed to be quite popular. I mean, you had the history of Rome, you had the history of England. I didn't even really know about hardcore history at that stage. But to me, I didn't really want to do that, because even though I could find interesting tidbits and some nice anecdotes and everything, I didn't want to be stuck with the country in case it got boring.
The history of Ireland?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, until I did the 1916 Rising miniseries, and I'd always sort of planned on doing that, but until I did that, I find Irish history, well, I don't find it still, but I used to find it, like, completely dull, especially in comparison even to British history, which sounds awful. I mean, I'd be accused of being a West Brit if anyone heard me say that from Ireland, but like that's often what they call, like, even to hold the views that I held about basically the 1916 Rising being wrong, I'd be called a West Brit for that. But I don't know, I was worried that, oh, actually I think there was at least an Irish history pod. Finn Dwyer does,
right,
the,
yes, yeah, indeed.
Yeah, so I also didn't want to step on anyone's toes. Not that I'd in any way surpass him or anything like that, but I wanted to find something that was completely niche and completely new. And I remember writing out concepts for it, and I remember being like, what do I want? And I was like writing out like sentences and like writing out kind of like, oh, this is what I want to do. I want to find out what happens. And I was like, well, what happens when? And then it was kind of, I was turning it over and I was like, I want to know what happens when wars happen. And I was like, well, what would I even call the podcast? And I was like, When Wars Happen is a terrible name for a podcast. And I was like, yeah, what about Casus Belli, like the cause of war kind of thing? That could work. And then I was like, well, I don't know. I'd rather have something that I feel like I somewhat created. And then I was kind of like, well, what is war? Like, and then I was looking up, like, I wasn't even trying to find it. It's always when you don't try and find it that you do find it. And yeah, it was like war is the failure of diplomacy. And I can't even remember who said that. I think it was, it might have been Salisbury or it might have been Lord Derby or something like that. I was not even looking for it, and I couldn't tell you where I found it. But when I saw war is the failure of diplomacy, that kind of stuck with me. And I was like, well, I want to communicate the fact that my podcast is going to at least try to bring in diplomacy into it, rather than covering equipment or armies or anything like that. So I thought to myself, well, if it's all about diplomacy and eventually diplomacy like not working out and resulting in wars, and then I tried to write down what I felt, and it was like, I want to find out what happens when diplomacy fails. And then when I saw When Diplomacy Fails, I was kind of like, huh, no, I don't really like it. And then I went away from it. And then a few weeks later, I was talking to one of my friends in college, and I was like, I'm trying to think of a name for a podcast. And he was like, oh, I thought you had like a few different ideas. And I was like, well, not really. No, they're not very good. And he was like, well, read them out to me. And when I came to the When Diplomacy Fails one, he was like, you should go with that. And I was like, I don't really think it would work. I mean, it's, and then he was like, why? And I was like, well, first of all, the initials of it would be WDF. and people would instantly be like,
right. I was going to ask
you. Yeah, yeah. And like people would instantly be like, well, WTF, ha ha ha. And then he was like, oh, that doesn't really matter though. You could just own it and it would be fine. And I was like, yeah, well, I don't know though. And I was still like, this is 20-year-old Zach and like not really able to think for himself. So it's kind of, I mulled it over still. This was in about January or February. And I wanted to have a good solid name that would stick with people and people could remember it. And eventually, part of the reason that I got drawn to When Diplomacy Fails was because of its initials, which like, in a way, it really helps because people are like, haha, like, I mean, not that many, surprisingly. But still, I mean, it's noticeable. I mean, you noticed it. So, like, the fact that people point that out, I mean, I like to think that kind of helps it along in a way.
It definitely does. It works for Anne as a man. I mean, there is something that draws your attention.
Yeah.
A contradiction in terms, a question. And I think that is, in a nutshell, what you have to do anyway when you present content, whether it's a blog post or a podcast. You have to draw your listener in with a question. Look, what happened here? What is this?
Yeah.
And sometimes history podcasters are just telling the story. Okay, well, it's enough to just, you know, put the facts in order. And Mike Duncan was someone who did that. He didn't ask too many questions. He just sat down and recounted the history of Rome, which at the time when there were not so many history podcasts and he was the only one to cover the history of Rome, then maybe that is the right thing to do. But when there are so many histories, you have to give a very, very, very good reason for the listener to stay tuned in.
Sure. And I think in my head, the idea with When Diplomacy Fails, it was going to be what I wanted to do. I wasn't gonna suffer like anyone else. As in, I wasn't gonna cover wars that had already been covered extensively, which might sound hypocritical because of the plans I have for When Diplomacy Fails. They might or might not include the Second World War, I'm not sure. But the idea was, I knew, having looked up some random history books, that there was fascinating conflicts out there. Maybe fascinating is the wrong word considering people died during them, but the build up to the wars and the reasons why wars broke out or why they didn't break out, I always found, and I still obviously do find that fascinating. And I felt like there must be other people like me who might not necessarily care too much for the actual Army A moved to here and then Army B did this, but they'd actually be interested in the people and how they felt and why this king thought that war was a good idea, or how he managed to separate these two allies and make war against one of them with the other one behind him and that kind of thing. And I think because some of those stories can be dull no matter what you do, but some of them can be so incredibly captivating and just draw you in so much that I think I felt almost compelled to do that. And that kind of concept, it took me a while to kind of write up exactly what it was that I wanted to capture. And even in the first few episodes, it's like, even having said what I just said to you, I even gave equal time to the war and the diplomacy and all that kind of stuff. And it wasn't for a while that I really said, you know what, rather than give people the war, why don't I just do most, like 7/8 of it being diplomacy, and then like 1/8 just covering the major events to link it all together. And then I eventually settled on that. And then once I settled on that, I realized that rather than covering things in a big hour-long chunk, I could cover them in more comfortable multi-part episodes. And it was a gradual learning process. But yeah, this seems more like a personal biography or something than an interview with yourself. But you know what I mean? It's like you find along the way what it is you're good or bad at. And then you grow the confidence to say, do you know what? I'm actually just going to do what I want because it's my podcast.
That should not be the only reason. I think also when that is what you're really interested in, that is what's going to keep you going, what is going to keep you excited about what you're talking about. And,
yeah.
And that excitement is going to be heard by the listener. Well, you can only hope that it will catch on. But if you're not excited, it will definitely not catch on. So I think that's absolutely right. And I, for one, I'm with you there. I I could not be bothered too much about all the battles in a war. Wars are interesting exactly because it's strange that they should happen because they involve so many risks. Afterwards, they bring about so many changes, and that's why it's really interesting to learn about them.
Mm.
But for example, the First World War, that's a major change in 20th century history. But I couldn't care less. Well, of course, the Battle of the Somme, to take just one example, is a tremendously important battle. But what is there to say about it? It was a huge battle that went on and on and on and on and on and on. And after how long was it? 6 weeks, 2 months, 3 months. I don't know how long you should count the Battle of the Somme to continue, but nothing changed. Only that a million casualties.
Well, sure.
And then the question is, why did they go on? And that would be very interesting. But just to say that, well, it started on the 1st of July and so many men went over the top and then they reached this village and that village. Those are the kind of details that gets me bored pretty quickly. Of course, there is a huge public out there wants to hear about it or wants to hear about all technical stuff, what kind of weapons they use and how they were used and tactics. And okay, great. But the diplomacy thing, that's exactly where I'm at. And
cool.
So that formula that you're using that works well for you works very well for me as well.
Well, great, great. And I would presume that you're not the only one simply because, I mean, it's only inevitable that you get better as you keep going with it. But I have been told that I'm much better now than I was when I started, and I should hope that that would be the case. But I was relieved almost, and it might sound surprising because, of course, people would have the same interests in history as yourself. But when you're young and you don't really know and you don't have the confidence to kind of be like, I'm just going to do this, you're kind of like, well, would anyone care? And if you measure it per capita of the world population, you'd probably be like, well, what's the point? But you know you're reaching a certain audience every week, and you know that people do enjoy it, and you know that you enjoy it yourself, and you're dead right about what you said. I would not be able to still do this if I tried to please everyone. You'd be able to tell it from my voice. Even in some of the episodes that dragged on through wars, and I had to cover each battle because I thought people had to know this information, and you got mispronounced names, you got rushed facts, you got loads of like incidents just listed out because I thought I had to do them, and it's just not worth it. And I realized that, and thankfully changed my formula since. Do you think there's other podcasts like that? As in, do you think this podcast that started out in a certain way, maybe at the start you were kind of thinking, oh, this kind of has potential, but he always does things kind of in this way or something like that, and now that you listen to it now, you're like, yeah, this, he's kind of hit his stride. I like what he's doing with this topic, and he satisfies my craving for this period in history or this topic that he's covering. Maybe that's a really broad question, but
it is a very broad question. But let me answer it this way: I can see in almost any podcast that I have been following for a really large number of episodes over a long period of time that every podcast develops his own voice, and you see that those that keep going, they have found something that works for them, right? Because it's in your spare time, you're not going to make a lot of money out of it. You have some contributors, but it definitely, I would assume that it doesn't cover the costs, let alone bring in some income. So it really has to come from your own passion. You really feel like doing this and continue doing it. So you have to do it your own way. And you can see that everybody finds his own way of doing it. And then, of course, as a listener, I find my content that matches my taste. And so there are a couple of people who are doing stuff that I can see what they are doing. I can understand what other people might like about it, but it doesn't work for me.
And
I really don't want to mention names here because there are a couple of podcasts out there that I think are probably good podcasts, and I just can't keep up with them because something is not working for me. I would not even begin to suggest that they are bad podcasts. So if I have nothing to say about it, then really I shouldn't say. But I have to put it like that there are history podcasts that somehow I do not connect to.
Sure. Okay.
And as long as you're not feeling obliged to review them, then that's just fine. There are so many podcasts out there. Sometimes it's a bit of a disappointment because if they're covering a subject that I would love to learn more about,
sure.
and they're not doing it in a way that I can
get
on board with, that's a very nice way of putting it. And then it's not happening for me. But maybe if it's not happening for me, and maybe there are some more people for whom it's not happening, and maybe there is indeed something missing. And I've been asking myself lately the question about why are many history podcasts missing something, in my opinion? One of the things that I mentioned is some of them are going on too long and mm-hmm. they have to do some more preparation. And some of them are not making a point. They are not making clear why is this relevant? Why am I telling this? Because it is not enough to just tell facts. As a matter of fact, I should be easy public for you. I am really interested in history, anytime, anywhere in the world. Tell me history. I would love to hear about it. But then again, I can relate to those people who are terribly bored by history. And why are they bored? Because probably they were scared away by those history teachers who are just mechanically taking a long piece of thread and putting one bead after another piece of fact and another fact and another fact, and that is history. And that is just boring. You can't just bring it as a list of things. Here's what happened.
Yeah.
But when you and sometimes it can be a very, very simple question. Like, for example, let's say the Anglo-Dutch Wars, the Second Anglo-Dutch War, if there is somebody who can be pointed as a victor, then would be the Dutch. Well, if you tell anybody, if England and Holland go to war, who is going to win? Well, everybody would expect England to win. It's a larger country and it has a longer... So, hey, how did that happen?
Yeah. Such a good story.
Yeah.
It really is.
Or, for example, about the First World War. It was a terrible slaughter. On the Western Front, nothing moved. After 4 years, nothing really changed. Why did they go on with that?
Yeah.
That's a very good question. So if you put it that way, then it should not be very difficult to draw people in. But you have to be aware that you have to do that. You have to make it, and then sometimes, almost all the time, you have to break it down to sub-questions that are also interesting. So for the episode of today, like, where we're going to talk for half an hour, this is what we're trying to find out today. And as long as you do that, you frame that stuff, I think you're doing a good job. And very frequently it is lacking. It's also lacking because there are not so many good examples. There are not so many history podcasts that are doing that. They're posing a very clear question. And this is what we're going to try to find out. Or what you have been doing for a couple of times, the mainstream look at this narrative is like this and like this and like this. And let's look at it again and see if it was really like that. That should be interesting, I would say. Or at least that makes it much more interesting to hear the facts again and to look at them and say, how can you look at it differently?
Yeah.
And when there is something like that of a challenge, then you're drawn in. I think many podcasters are just so excited about what they have to tell that the mere idea that they're telling and that the microphone is open is enough. And that should not be enough.
No, I get what you mean.
Alrighty. Yeah, I know that was a bit of an unnatural way to end the first part of the interview, but there you go. I had to split it up somehow, and I figured that was the best way. I hope you enjoyed the first part, guys, and that you'll tune in for the second part. Thanks very much for listening. And I'll be seeing you all soon.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.